Now, the fourth and last installment of the Talk of the Nation Summer Movie Awards today, Best Death Scenes. Well, I guess that's appropriate. Do you like Mel Gibson's dramatic freedom in Braveheart or the more common comic Slim Pickens riding the bomb in Dr. Strangelove? We've been collecting your emails all week. We still want to hear from you. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Of course, no awards show is complete without a Lifetime Achievement Award, or in this case, a Death Time Achievement Award. In the history of American film, few died more often and none more memorably than the great James Cagney. He made his first big mark as the Public Enemy, which doesn't even count as a death scene because he was already dead when he fell face first at his mother's feet. But he played a lot of good guy gangsters at a time when Hollywood's Hays Office insisted that crime must never pay. So, in the Roaring Twenties, the conscience-stricken Cagney disposes of the evil Humphrey Bogart, but gets a bullet in the back. With the grace of the hoofer he was, Cagney stumbles up the snow-blown steps of a church. Without a close-up or so much as a word of dialogue, you can see him appreciate the irony that the one decent thing he ever did in his life would be the last thing he ever does. Long-suffering girlfriend Gladys George runs up the steps and cradles his head in her lap as a policeman walks up and pulls out a notebook.
He's dead.
Well, who is this guy?
This is Eddie Butler.
Well, how are you hooked up with him?
Never figure it out.
What was his business?
He used to be a big shot.
One more. Angels with Dirty Faces. The neighborhood kids worship the gritty gangster. As he's on the way to the electric chair, though, Father Pat O'Brien persuades Cagney that he can save the kids from a life of crime if only he would go to his death not as a hero, but as a coward.
I don't want to die, oh, please. I don't want to die, oh, please. Oh, don't make me burn it out. Oh, please, let go of me. Please, don't kill me. Oh, don't kill me, please. Oh.
They just burned the kid. Jimmy Cagney in White Heat, The Roaring Twenties, and Angels with Dirty Faces. Murray Horowitz is director and COO of the American Film Institute Silver Theater and Cultural Center. He joins us once again in Studio 3A to help us decide the greatest death scene ever. I hope I haven't stolen off the thunder there.
No, not at all, Neil. But, you know, it's interesting when you mentioned that nobody died as so often nor so well as Cagney. There may be a great death director, because all those movies were directed by different people. But Akira Kurosawa has some of the greatest death scenes, and not surprisingly, his great actor Toshiro Mifune is in many of them. And his version of Macbeth, Throne of Blood, has an incredible death scene with Mifune getting hit by arrows. And it turns out that all of the arrows that hit Mifune in his armor and finally killed, all of the arrows were real arrows, except for the very final one, the very last one.
Really?
Yeah, he got shot with real arrows.
Did they not have a union in Japan in those days?
not for death, apparently. But that's interesting. It may be one of the things that, because it was so real, we're shocked. Among the things that makes a great death scene in the movies, apparently reality or realism is not one of them.
No, I wouldn't think so.
You know, my father was a physician, and he always used to point out that people don't generally die with, you know, tell Jean I loved her. And then, you know, not most people mercifully die in a kind of stupor, or they're out of it. But these are the movies, so we're talking about extreme and often violent deaths.
So, or those death scenes, someday when the boys are all up against it, tell them to go out and win one
for the giver. Right, yeah. No, exactly so. And they got, so great writing is one of the elements in it. And some of the other elements, I mean, it's got to be a death that's satisfying, that's okay for us in the audience in some way, whether it's revenge or poetic justice or pathos. So it's driven by character and plot, and it has to be the right death at the right time for the right reasons.
Well, let's get listeners involved as we always do. David Stork joins us now from Portola Valley in California. Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks, Neil.
What's your favorite death scene?
Well, some of the most creative and memorable death scenes in cinema appear in Stanley Kubrick's 1968 masterpiece, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
From the HAL 9000 computer's murder of astronaut Frank Poole, who frantically tries to reattach his severed air hose while tumbling into the void of outer space, to the murder of the three hibernating crewmen announced by the silent sign, life functions terminated, and those vital medical traces going flat. But perhaps the most poignant death is, of course, of HAL himself.
We have a little bit of that on tape. Let's listen in as HAL 9000 gasps his last.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid, Dave. Dave. My mind is going.
But not before he managed to sing a chorus of Daisy, Give Me Your Answer, True.
Your answer, do. Yes, indeed.
I think, David, I think you're right. It's very creative. It's very inventive. You may be trying to sneak a fast one by us because it's actually, he isn't an organism and he gets sort of turned off. And you may recall that in the sequel, 2010, insofar as that sequel, he gets turned on again. So HAL comes back.
Poignant death in the movie, and yet, of course, it's turning off a computer. But we feel it. We care about HAL the way we don't care about Frank or the popsicle astronauts who are in hibernation. So that's what cinema should do, you know, broaden our notion of what death is or life is. And I think Kubrick did it masterfully. And without violence, silence and so forth, it's just awe-inspiring.
And we couldn't figure out whether Keir DeLay was alive or dead at the end, so...
Well, the whole movie blurs the distinction between man and machine, after all, HAL is the most human character, and between humans and extraterrestrials. Dave becomes a star child. So that's part of the whole idea of the movie, I think.
Okay, well, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That was David Stork, and David Stork joined us... he joined us from somewhere, and it's written down on one of these pieces of paper, believe me. Murray, it's interesting. We've been doing this for 4 weeks now. The largest number of submissions that we have had is for best death scene.
I know, and I was thinking about that, and it says something about the movies and about ourselves, doesn't it? But I think it's true. First of all, what David said about the cinematic treatment, HAL it does expand our notions of film and what film can do, and it I think challenges filmmakers to come up with their best shot. But also this is the born out of which no traveler returns, and we're fascinated with it. And interestingly, Neil, I think few of us would opt to see the real thing on film,
mm-hmm.
Right?
No, nobody wants to actually go see a snuff movie.
You know, not many people. Or, you know, you see the people who've done assisted suicides who videotape themselves, and it's just something really awful and grating But when we see it somehow transmogrified through cinematic art, it's we're attracted to it.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Joe calling from Macomb, Illinois.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I think one of the best death scenes is the one in The Sting, where Robert Redford at the end and so forth, because it leaves you so totally convinced that you have just seen a death scene, and then you realize they pulled the wall over your eyes.
It's a fake death scene.
Right. I think that's right. And, you know, there are a number of fake deaths. And there are also a number of, and that gives you, you know, there's humor. Mm-hmm. can be a big part of some of the best, that's a whole nother story. I mean, there's some of my favorite death scenes you will not be surprised to learn were Jimmy Durante and It's a Mad, 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 Mad World is one of my favorite death scenes where he literally kicks the bucket. But Joe's right, and there's a film with a lot of the Monty Pythonites in it called Yellowbeard, where there's a death scene where the guy's showing them how to fake a death, but he accidentally gets stabbed in the process, and so they think he's fake. It's very funny, and it's a very good death scene.
Of course, Joe, there's also those same two characters have a pretty memorable death scene in that other picture they made, that Western. What was the name of that? Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids. Who are those guys anyway?
That's right.
Just a couple of unknowns, and, you know, I'm sure someday somebody will dig them out of the archives. I think another great death scene, real quick, is the one in Indiana Jones and the Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, right?
Yeah,
you're thinking
of the Lost Ark, yeah.
The assassin sword wielder, baby, right?
Right, right. Where he pulls the gun out and disposes of it.
Yeah, the guy does 30 seconds of whipping the sword around and pulls the gun out and shoots him.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Joe, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Here's an email we got. How about the final death scene in Cool Hand Luke, when Newman's convict escapee character Luke Jackson is shot by police after repeating the famous line, "What we got here is a failure to communicate."
It's
I don't
true.
Think he says it as well as Strother Martin did.
No, and then there's that great final shot where you see the crossroads from on top. So there's a kind of, redemptive moment at that death.
Rutger Hauer nominates Jason Prue in Kansas City. Rutger Hauer is Roy Batty in Blade Runner. Emotional, ethereal score by Vangelis, coupled with a simple final speech improvised by Hauer. A moving performance, a memorable film death. "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. All these moments will be lost in time, like tears
in the rain.
Time to die."
Yep. Yep.
We're talking with Murray Horowitz of the AFI Silver Theater about the best death scene ever, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Walt. Walt with us from Hill City in South Dakota.
Yeah. Hello, Neil. This is Wally, actually. It wasn't Walt. It was Wally, but that's all right. I was going to nominate the death scene in what was actually kind of a tacky movie, but everybody remembers it. It was Soylent Green, with Edward G. Robinson dying in a euthanasia clinic with surround sound and the video pictures of the deer leaping and all that stuff.
And it was actually Edward G. Robinson's last movie. There's a story about it, because Charlton Heston, who plays the scene with him, writes about it in his memoirs, that he was very, very moved. He somehow may have sensed that it was Edward G. Robinson's farewell, as well as Edward G. Robinson's character's suicide. And he says those tears on screen are real tears.
And Soylent Green, of course, is People. So he's shortly after that turned into a McBurger of some sort or another.
Absolutely. He's a Robinson burger.
Yeah. But Edward G. Robinson, if you're going to pick one of his death
you
scenes,
bet.
Come on.
Little
you know,
Caesar.
Mother of Mercy. Is this the end of Rico?
Yeah, it's a great, and again, one of those moments where there's just something satisfying about the way he does. Great acting. We haven't mentioned that. That's a big element in death scenes.
We are mentioning some pretty good actors. Walt, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for letting me on.
Sure. Let's see if we can get, this is Mike. Mike calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
How are you doing today, guys?
Hi, Mike.
Good. I think All That Jazz would be an interesting one to talk about, and the fact that the movie really is one big long death scene between Roy Scheider and Jessica Lange.
That's right. And the finale, you know, his death is sort of abstracted into a... Right, he's got that musical number, Bye Bye Life, at the end, and it's sort of This Is Your Life death scene, and it's probably the best choreographed death ever.
Exactly. Good movie.
Thanks, Mike. It's showtime. Now, joining us now is Heather Fraze, who joins us from Alexandria, Virginia. Nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
And your nominee for best death scene ever.
Not best, most memorable.
Okay.
Paul Reubens' vampire character is slain in Buffy the Vampire with a ruler.
With a ruler.
And it is extremely artificial and contrived with the very obviously it's intended to be that way.
We thought maybe it was a ruler with a large piece of ham implanted on it, on its point. Let's listen to Paul Reubens kicking the bucket in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
You're going to wish you died. Ooh! Ah! Ow! Ooh! Ooh! Ah!
Ah. believe it or not, that goes on.
Well, you know, vampire deaths are always good for their very uncertainty. You know, will he come back? But this one does go on and on. And in a way, it's fitting because it is the send-up of those endless death scenes, you know, that take everybody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Heather's quite right because it's ironic. He claims he can't be killed and he just keeps dying and dying, dying.
Heather, is that why you like it?
I just remember the moment sitting there and thinking, is this for real and is it over yet? And that's what really stuck with me. You don't get that very often in death scenes.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Heather Fraze joined us from Alexandria, Virginia, where she listens to Talk of the Nation. I'm beginning to bet on WAMU here in Washington, D.C. Murray, your nominee for best death scene ever.
Well, you know, people have mentioned, you know, Hal, and there's some non-human deaths. Bambi's mother is one of the most profound and important deaths, and it's in an animated film. And then there's, of course, Bambi himself in Bambi versus Godzilla, but
I missed that one.
But the for poignancy and poetic justice, my favorite is gotta be King Kong on top of the Empire State Building.
And let's listen to the great final scene as the body lies there heaving on 34th and 5th.
Wait a minute, let me through, officer. My name's Denham.
Just a moment, oh, Lieutenant.
Lieutenant, I'm Carl Denham.
Carl Denham.
Denham? Well, that's the man that captured the monster.
Well, Denham, the airplane's got him. Oh, no. It wasn't the airplanes. It was Beauty killed the beast.
Murray, these scenes, gave a lot of work to violin players over the years.
It's true. You can't die, you know, to a trombone.
Murray Horwitz, thanks. This has been great fun.
This has been great fun. Thank you.
This is the last of our summer movie series. We thank Murray Horwitz for putting this series together. And if you think Murray knows his facts and flicks, well, you should know that he's had a bunch of people making him smart at the American Film Institute. They're Todd Hitchcock, Alex Horwitz, Mike Jeck, and Gabe Wardell. We thank all of them and Murray for joining us, and we thank you for putting up with this nonsense. That's the AFI Silver Theater in Silver Spring in Maryland. Ira's here tomorrow. We'll see you Monday. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.